Hello, and welcome to the Better Dental Life podcast, where we speak with extraordinary individuals who inspire us by showing us new possibilities and shattering our limiting beliefs. On this podcast, we don't just talk about better smiles, we talk about better lives. I'm your host, Mark Davis. It's time for another episode of the Better Dental Life podcast. My guest today is Dr. Aaron Tinkle. I've known Aaron for quite some time. We've rubbed shoulders in the CEREC doctor world and traveled around the world a little bit together. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So Aaron's a dentist at his own dental practice. He owns Belmont Family Dentistry, which is a growing, at least it's, I don't know if it's still growing. It grew for a long time. It's big now. Very successful dental practice. I really look up to him and respect what he's doing in dentistry. And I think my favorite memory with Aaron as we spent time together was running across the Golden Gate Bridge. That was a highlight for me.
For sure. That was a great day.
Yeah. Any chance I get to run is fun. And then running there was just incredible. It was fun.
Well, an impromptu running date across the Golden Gate Bridge when you're at an implant symposium. So
right, exactly. Yeah. Learning about implants. Yeah,
we weren't expecting that. So
it was good stuff. So I want to know a little bit about how you got into dentistry. I mean, you have a lot of family members that are dentists. Kind of a foregone conclusion that you'd also become a dentist because of that?
Oh, not at all. My father's actually a teacher and my mother's a budget manager accountant. But my father's the youngest of three sons and my grandfather was a dentist. And the oldest kid, especially son in that day, of every dentist was going to be the dentist. My dad was the youngest. They didn't even bother with it. So my uncle is a dentist and he actually taught at Oregon Health Sciences University for 30 years in the endo department. But him and my grandfather never really told me about dentistry. I wanted to be in something medicine. That was after I figured out I couldn't be a professional race car driver. So,
Yes. That's disappointing.
I mean, it is very disappointing. I think I could have really done it. But, you know, anyway, I wasn't born into the go-karting thing, you know. So, anyway, as a second choice, I wanted to be a surgeon of some type. And, you know, we have our volunteer hours we need in college. So, started volunteering at the hospital every Wednesday night in the ER. And every doctor I met told me to be a dentist. So the surgeon, the ER docs, they all said, why don't you be a dentist? So I asked my uncle, I was like, hey, will you tell me about this? And I think he was a little bit reluctant to tell you the truth because he didn't want to talk me into it. Because I think, you know, he was born a dentist. So there was none of that pressure for
him. There was no choice for him.
Yeah. And so he says, well, I'm not going to really tell you about it. But here's some of my colleagues that are actually near Oregon State where I went to undergrad. And I said, why don't you shadow them? So I did. And I still remember that first day of shadowing. It was amazing. The guy who I was watching took me out to lunch and he said, you know, Aaron, really appreciate how excited you are, but there's a couple things we don't say in the dental operatory. I'm like, oh, what's that? And he's like, well, at one point you said, whoa, that's a lot of blood. And he says, you said at one point, are you sure that doesn't hurt?
So he says, that's good advice.
Yeah, he says, I appreciate the enthusiasm, but we just, you know, temper that a little bit. I was like, oh, okay. But I thought it was great, you know, this idea of kind of surgery, but primary care, you know. So, and my aunt was a periodontist, so I have a lot of connections there. And then I went to dental school, and I'm very passionate about it, obviously. And my wife she was a year ahead of me in undergrad. She was trying to figure out what she wanted to do with her life. And she's like, well, if that guy can be a dentist, I can do it.
So, anybody can do it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm married to the guy. I mean, you can't be that smart. So anyway, she went to dental school too. And so dentistry is, I mean, I love it. And there was definitely no family pressure, but it is nice to have family members that understand, you know, the pressures that are with a dentist. I mean, it's just not a job. It's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, for sure. Now, did you then meet Amanda before your wife, Amanda?
Yeah.
So everybody knows. Did you meet her before you started dental school?
So I met her my sophomore year of college. So yeah, and we dated through college and she was a German major and I was a zoology major with a pre-med, pre-dental thing. And so she graduated not knowing what she wanted to do. And we're actually this August going to be on our 20th anniversary.
Ah, congratulations.
Which is really interesting. One of our mutual really good friends, Dave Stinchfield, who's been on your podcast, his anniversary is his 30th anniversary this year. And so we're going to Costa Rica together. So
fun.
Kind of celebrate and hang out. So
I love that.
Yeah, dental geeks like to kind of hang out together. That's so
right. We find a way.
We do, absolutely.
Oh, that's great. So then you both went to OHSU, Amanda and you?
Yep. So I was 4 years ahead of her. And then when I finished, you know, she started. And during that time, when I got out, I was working Monday through Thursday. And then on Fridays, I teach at the dental school. And there was one particular day that stands out that as a visiting faculty member, you are associate faculty member, you're essentially a TA, right? And just kind of like when we mentor down at CDOCS, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
But I was in charge of my wife's section in the lab. And we quickly found out that I should not be in charge of her section because
wasn't healthy.
There were some tears and some misunderstandings. And, you know, I was no longer going to be grading her. That's for sure.
So now you practice in separate practices. So that brings up a good point. Did you decide then maybe we shouldn't be practicing together?
Well, we decided we had an option to be married or work together. So, you know, we figured the marriage thing was working out okay. So we might as well do that. In all honesty, we have quite a few friends that practice together and they make it work. I think that different personalities were definitely different and we practice completely differently. Even though I'd say our base goals of patient care and an idea of ideal dentistry is the same, pace is different, how we handle staff is different. She is equal partners in a three-doctor practice. I'm in a three-doctor practice, but I don't share well in the sandbox. So I'm the owner and I've got two associates who are amazing and they let me feel like I'm running the show, even though they probably do. So anyway, we practice differently and that's really helped. It also makes a lot more sense when you think about vacation time. Because when we leave, our practices don't shut down anymore. And as you know, there's no such thing as paid vacation when you are a dentist, you know, self-employed. So it really actually helps ease the guilt or the worry of leaving.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, it is more expensive than people realize for us to take time off because it's not the cost of the vacation. That's nothing. It's the cost of not working.
Oh God, I could stay at a Ritz-Carlton and eat lobster every meal and it'd be less expensive than what I could have produced, right?
Right.
So it's, yeah. But you do have to, that work-life balance, man. When my wife graduated, she gave me a calendar when she was going to go where. And she said, well, you can come or I'm going to send you postcards, but here's where I'm going. So my first like 3 years, I took off a day a year. So that wasn't going to work.
I'm glad you figured it out. That's good.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, did you always want to own your own practice?
I like the autonomy of the owning of the practice. The people who I shadowed the most were private practitioners. And at the time, my family, none of them are entrepreneurs. My aunt, who's a periodontist, she worked for Kaiser, a large health organization up here in the Northwest as one of their lead periodontists. And my uncle he worked at the dental school. My grandfather owned a practice and he was quite an entrepreneur. He always had side hustles. You know, I don't think dentists in the 50s were compensated at the level we are now. And so he would have all sorts of like side businesses. So he had that streak, but I didn't really know much about being an entrepreneur, but I like the idea of being in control of your own domain, right? And what I've found is I actually like the entrepreneur part, probably, but equal at least to the dentistry part.
You know, I find that as well for me, and that's certainly not everybody because there's many that don't love that part.
Right. Yeah, my associates are associates. Well, one of them for sure is an associate because she doesn't want to do that. Both of her parents were dentists and they had private practices and she knows the sacrifices and she's an absolute amazing person and I'm lucky to work with her. And I never thought I'd want a partner, but I offer her the partnership every day and she very quickly declines it. So
there you go.
Yeah, because it's not her card. So
that part, the thing that I think is hard for us as dentists running the business is we think of the money-making part where we have fingers in somebody's mouths. And then if we're working and our fingers aren't in somebody's mouth, it feels like it's work that's not making money. So how do you balance that? How do you take care of the administrative part? Do you schedule time? How do you make that work for you?
Good question. I'm a client of Sphere Practice Solutions. And in the beginning, I wasn't very good at that balance, honestly. I was the office manager, the hiring person, all that. But we've grown so much over 14 years. In fact, a really interesting milestone last month. It was our best month ever, which honestly, when you're used to growing, that happens a lot, your best month ever. But it happened to finally eclipse my first year's production. So my 1 month eclipsed my first year of production.
Wow, that's impressive. That's amazing.
Yeah. And so, but I was bumping along and I've had different consulting firms before. And honestly, once you get to a certain, we could probably talk a whole podcast on that, but I feel like once you get to a certain size, you need somebody that has more expertise in this than you do to help. And a great guy named Mitch at Spear Practice Solutions. I mean, you know him.
Oh yeah, I know Mitch. You bet.
He sat me down via Zoom, as you sit via Zoom. And he says, Aaron, I've got some advice for you. And, you know, if you don't take this advice, I think you're probably wasting your money with us. And I'm like, whoa, what's this? So, you know, he says that if you don't, you're not going to be able to grow anymore if you don't get an office manager. Why don't you have one? And I had a laundry list of excuses from people I'd hired from the outside that didn't work out or this or that. But my main excuse at the time was I'd been training somebody to be our office manager, but somebody else in my staff was actually probably the more natural fit. And Mitch told me, he said, so Aaron, you don't have an office manager. Are you restricting your growth because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings for your $3 million business? I was like, holy crap. Monday, I will have an office manager. So, right. So that's, we've developed, in my personal opinion, developing somebody within has been really good. When we hired people from the outside, that wasn't great. And it's just all about people's leadership styles, right? And so mine and I, we have a great relationship. Now, some people want an office manager that's the CEO. They even pick numbers, goals, and things like that. They want to do the hire and firing, all that stuff. I need my hands in the cookie jar. That's not my style, but I haven't done a first interview on anybody in 2 years now. And in fact, it seems like you're always interviewing somebody, right? And then I don't deal with the small staff stuff, but when it gets to be a big deal, we'll both deal with it together. So I think there's so many different ways to skin that cat. But for us, it was really nice to have somebody sit me down and say, you can't do this anymore. We need your fingers and mouth. So
now what is dentistry like in Portland? Or what, you know, maybe what's unique there that maybe you wouldn't see somewhere else?
I think with any city that's medium to large, you have different pockets. Every dentist in Portland or every student graduating wants to work in this small suburb called Lake Oswego, where it's affluent. It would be like the Pasadena or any of the upper end neighborhoods in San Francisco or Seattle, right? And they have a lot of money. My part of Portland is literally like the hipster capital of the world, honestly. It has a lot of people who are highly educated. So definitely it's not on the lower income scale. People wouldn't say it's a rich area. And I find those type of people are interested in health more than looks. So I used to do about 5 Invisalign cases a year because I was doing it for looks. Okay. Well, Invisalign is about 10% of my practice now because we do it for function. And if you tell them that straightening their teeth will make them less periodontal disease, less gingivitis, less incisal wear, overall better health of those teeth long-term, and will actually create less dentistry down the road. And then we do some bleaching. I'm not a huge veneers person, but more power to if you want to do that. I now do 6 a month. It's quite a bit different. So finding what works for your area works great. But I think a lot of people misconstrue an upper income area being desirable, but some of those people would rather put rims on their vehicle than to fill a cavity in the back where it doesn't show, you know?
Yeah, some of my wealthiest patients do not value dentistry, and it's strange. And other people scrape.
Right.
And grab every last bit of finances they have to keep their teeth working.
Well, right. And what about these cases that it's, you know, an upper and lower hybrid? You can be, you know, $70,000 for that. And those patients, my patients are never rich who do that. A few of them, I've had a few write a check. But these are people that you planted a seed and 2 or 3 years later, they're ready to go. But they scrape and scratch and claw to get that. And I love those people. It's great. So I really do enjoy seeing a large, I mean, that's why it's Belmont Family Dentistry. I don't particularly love working on kids, but I made a business decision a long time ago that if I got one mom to get my phone number, that meant she got a husband and 3 kids. And I just got 5 people for 1 contact. So we make that work, but it also gives me a wide range. So there was a pretty remarkable day about maybe 4 years ago where we had a 2-year-old and we had a 104-year-old in the same day. So
get everybody cool. On each end.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So what challenges do you face? Do you see in the dental practice?
So, I mean, you have, I think our two major challenges are corporate dentistry and how do we respond to that? And then staff shortages. I mean, those are huge problems. And when I go down to Spear or CDocs or, you know, whether it's at a GARG course that we take, every dentist is, whether you're in Illinois or Florida, is dealing with the same problems. Now, I did run into a dentist from Alabama, and I could probably get anybody from Alabama to come up here because we pay like four times what they pay, you know, but then Seattle people pay double what I pay. So is it really interesting regional what your rates are, but really everybody's struggling with the retention and of staff because we're stealing from each other. And
so how do you answer that? What are you doing about that?
Well, last November, I gave everybody a 10% raise. And so I'm a person who addresses the elephant in the room. So we talk at a staff meeting about why do we on a bad day, I want my staff on a bad day to go home and pour an extra glass of wine instead of go home and go on Indeed and Craigslist. Okay. There's a difference because we all have bad days. But if they are happy in their jobs, they're going to get through a few rocky ones, right? So I do everything in my power to make sure that their needs are being met. And it's not always financially. Sometimes it's being heard. Sometimes it's they need a new stool because their back is starting to hurt. But you know, it's new stool for some people is like $1,800. So, you know, but figuring out the ways to get them what they need to make them feel a value member of the team is, I think, the most important thing. But keeping those staff is hard. We have a staff of 24 people.
I love those examples you gave of the stool, but and also money, because I made the mistake years ago of I'd heard somewhere that if people feel empowered, if people feel important, that like finances were so low that I neglected it for a while. And suddenly it became a problem, not because it wasn't their top priority, but because I was neglecting it so much, it suddenly became an issue. And I didn't realize I wasn't paying my team members what everyone else in town was.
And it creeps up on you. It really does. And we're nice guys, right? But that only gets you so far. And these people have the same bills we do. And they're not stupid. They talk to their people they went to hygiene school for, and they see, you know,
yeah, they know what everyone else is making for sure.
Yeah. No and question. So you need to make sure you're in that range. And if you're not, you're pretty scared.
Right. And I think it's healthy to be in the top side of that range.
I like, honestly, we try to make our fees and our pay at the 80th percentile. So that feels really good and comfortable to me. But we are also an office with a four-year-old building that's $4 million. And we're an office that has CEREC and we have Invisalign and iTero and CBCTs. So you can't be working out of a back alley and getting 80%.
Right. Yeah, that's not going to work. You've got to deliver it. But if your fees are in the 80th percentile and you want your team members to be on board and be proud of that, then they should get paid the same way. I like that comparison.
Without a doubt. So I actually, you know, I told you about that 10% raise. I completely changed how we pay our staff. We have complete transparent pay now in our office, which there's some new laws coming around on the left coast, you know, about transparent. You can't pay somebody who does the same job differently. So the idea is for gender equality and race equity, right? And so if you have four staff front office members and they all do the same thing, you should pay them the same. And so what we did is we created tiers. If you're under 5 years of experience, you get paid a certain amount. If you're over 5 years, you get a different amount. And but everybody knows that. So, you know, I don't, maybe some of our listeners don't know, but it's illegal to tell them they can't talk about wage. So everybody knows what they make. Now, that doesn't mean my office manager makes the same as the front office because that's a different classification. And then all my hygienists make the same. And so I've never even read this happening, but I did it because I was pretty frustrated with the just how difficult it is with transparency of wage. And sometimes the better negotiator in the review gets a better deal than the one who you actually maybe even like better because she's like, oh, I love you. Oh, I like you. And then maybe you only get a $2 raise and you got a $3 because the other person started at a $20 raise and you're like, come on, and you bring them down to $3, right? I'm sure you've experienced it.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're working on this type of pay scale. And then every November, that's another thing staff really want is they want annual reviews. I mean, they want to know how they're doing. They would like their chance to ask for more. Most dentists avoid them like the plague. but because it usually does cost you. So now in November, I'll have had 10 months of the year to figure out how we've been doing, and I'll have a pretty good idea how next year's doing. And then I can give each department a percentage raise. So leads get a little bump and stuff like that. But so I'm trying this out. We'll see. And that's part of being an entrepreneur, is you crash and burn sometimes. I mean, I might tell you in a year, like, oh boy, don't do that. I just created a union. Oh my God. Which I might have. So we'll see.
But I love trying, right? And you try something, and if it works, you keep doing it. And if it doesn't, you say, okay, we're going to switch gears again and try something different.
Well, now we've been doing the yearly reviews, and they have nothing to do with compensation. And now we're actually getting real change out of it, right? Because they're listening, because they're not just worried about if you're going to take what they negotiate. So it's been pretty empowering, and I'll see how it works. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to everybody to start it right away. Let me crash and burn first, but it's worth a shot.
No, I like that. And I've talked to others that are doing something very similar, and I like the transparency in that.
Yeah.
And I think less grumbling, more fairness, because they're talking. They know what each other's making generally, or at least somewhat.
Well, and I was worried that it would take the carrot for a performance away. But you know what it did? Now that we are in the 80th percentile of the Craigslist ad, of Indeed for our area, if somebody's not cutting it, I'm not scared anymore. We just had somebody leave, and I did an Indeed search, and we got 10 resumes and I asked every one of them, why did you apply? And they said, well, honestly, your compensation package is a lot more than most people. So it works. Yep. And then if they're going to be working at a place that's in that high-end quality, we need high-end quality people. And they kind of understand that in the beginning. So
I love that. Yeah. So the other challenge you mentioned was navigating what's going on with corporate dentistry. What do you mean by that? Where are the challenges that you see?
Well, so corporate dentistry, I mean, there's a lot of advantages to it, right? There's the buying power. There's the associates get a pretty high initial guaranteed, and then they get a lot of patients in the door. They're PPO for every insurance under the sun. They have some negotiating power that we maybe don't. So you have to, everybody's scared. People are too scared, and dentists in particular are extra scared. Like, oh my God, these DSOs are doing this and ruining this. And of course, there's more different types of DSOs than there are fish in the sea, right? But I can't compete as a take everything PPO office anymore against the DSOs, right? They're just going to have more advertising. But where I can knock their socks off and them out of the water is with reputation. With natural marketing, you know, between, you know, people telling their neighbors and that sort of thing, because we can control our little niche so much easier than a DSO can. So now that doesn't mean that the DSO isn't all negative, because there are some that are very helpful. In fact, some of them are getting really smart and you keep the same practice name, right? But up here, large ones, Gentle Dental, they have all Gentle Dental like stuff on it. But as Gentle Dental gets a 4.1 average star review, I'm not sure if that name recognition is very, it works in their favor.
Right.
You know,
but starts to be ironic.
Right. So, and it's one of those things where some of them gotten wise. We have another large one called Pacific Dental, and you don't really know unless you know their logo, but it's all different names. So I think that's a little bit, so they have a better shot at competing with us. But honestly, and this might sound arrogant, but I don't think there's any competition to us. No. It's just, we do our thing and we do it well. And we work very hard at changing it and improving it all the time. We have an hour staff meeting every single week, and we're always changing and improving. And for every 5 changes we do, we crash and burn on 1 or 2, and 3 are still there 5 years later. So we have that ability to be more nimble than the DSOs. And it's just, we can change a lot quicker and easier. We don't have to ask a chain of command to do anything.
Like you said, there are a lot of models of corporate dentistry, and it's changing a lot, especially in the last few years. So we're seeing different types of corporate dentistry. But I think what you're saying is really true. In general, there's no way they can compete with an owner who is passionate in their practice and active in their practice.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that in each individual practice. So, I mean, there's some models that are starting to get that way. Some corporations that have partnerships and some shared ownership that I think works. But in general, there's no way they can compete with that.
Right. And not everybody is as willing to have their practice be as big of a part of their life as you have been and I am. it means a lot to us. And there's that pride. And I think I'd do the same if I owned a construction business, honestly, because my brain's always on. It's always going. So now the DSOs, though, like you said, they're not the enemy, but competition makes everybody rise. So I think it might be a good thing for everybody.
Yeah. All right. Absolutely. This is, we're talking that you are enthusiastic about dentistry. You love what you're doing. Though I'm sure you mentioned there's days when it's a rough day and you go home and
it
wasn't your favorite day, right?
Yeah.
So what do you do? I mean, what does burnout, what does that mean to you? Or does that even in your vocabulary, do you ever feel like that for a few days and then you're like, okay, I'm back on it?
Absolutely. I take 5 weeks vacation a year. And honestly, that's full weeks. So I take some other 3 days and 4 day weekends, and I don't count CE as vacation unless we're in Switzerland or something like that. That might count. But one of the things we do, I notice and my staff notice. So that, let's call that once every 10 weeks. At about 9 weeks, some of my most, my favorite like assistants or hygienists start driving me effing crazy. Okay. The little things that normally don't bother me start bothering me. In fact, my staff called me Ted Lasso because I can make anything. Like that's, I'm just Mr. Energy. I don't drink coffee. I get up early. I'm ready to, I can start the day like out of a cannon, you know. But by week nine and a half, that cannon needs a longer, maybe it has a shorter fuse. Let's put it that way. And it's not always shooting up. And so I went on vacation last week and I just, my kids, we went to the coast and, you know, we went golfing and a bunch of fun stuff. And I came back this week and I was behind, and I don't run behind almost ever, but I was behind on every exam and every patient by about 10 minutes all week because I was loving life. I enjoyed talking to my patients. I was a little too much of a chatty Cathy, but my staff was like, okay, we know you're excited, but could you calm it down a little bit? So it, you do need to re-energize, and that's something I've learned. And I, like I said earlier, my wife is the one who instilled that, because you can't, you will burn out. So I could see, I think less than burnout, I could see, you know, we're, it's easy to think in decades, right? And, you know, in my 20s and 30s, it was all about building the machine. Okay. And some of the younger dentists I talked to that, you know, are impressed with what you have, right? Your big practice and all this. And I'm always telling them, be careful what you wish for, but I mean, I had my head down. I was working hard in my 20s and 30s. So, you know, I think 40s is keeping that momentum going. And then I could see myself being 3 days a week or doing one of those things where you go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you get a week off in between every week, right? And so I think you have to just always, back to that idea of change, be willing to shake things up. Because if you turn into that grumpy 9.5 week doctor, that whole, you're going to have to pay him higher than 80%.
So you said change and willing to try a lot of different things. You mentioned that a couple of times. So if you're going to try a lot of things, a lot of those are going to fail. So what does failure look like to you?
I think failure to me is not changing. It is to have the same problem and expect it to be different, right? So if you are constantly at a staff meeting talking about the same thing over and over and over. Oh, here's one. We had a magic leprechaun that was always leaving dishes in the sink. Okay. And we don't pay our cleaning people to do our dishes. They have other things to do. Somebody needs to do our dishes, right? And it was weird. This magic leprechaun, it was nobody had ever put them there. It was this magic leprechaun that put them there. I mean, but it's weird when I built the new practice and there is a security camera right over it. And I tell them the reason why that's there is to catch that leprechaun. We don't have the problem anymore. But we must have spent 10 minutes at every damn meeting talking about the house dishes were there. But now, so that is change that made a difference.
Oh, that's hilarious. That reminds me of a story. And I believe it was Kois that tells the story about pins in the pockets going through the wash. Mm-hmm. And after multiple meetings, he sewed all the pockets shut. It was like the same kind of idea. This We're having this conversation too many times. No more pockets.
And the definition of crazy is expecting a different result. So, I mean, but that, I mean, obviously a funny version, but we do that all the time. And if you're having chronic problems, go ahead and try. And to tell you the truth, sometimes when an idea didn't work, for example, a lot of people know the phone company and Weave, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we used them for a while and we were running into an issue. At the beginning, they were kind of growing faster than their britches, and they had some support issues and some server issues. And so we dropped them. and we had this next best greatest thing. But that was really hard on my staff. So I've learned, and by the way, we're back with Weave because I think they got a great product and it works really well now for us. So being able to admit a thing that you hated 6 months ago or even a year and a half ago and giving it, being able to give it another try because they improve their systems too, but then also respecting what change and then change back does to your staff. You need to tell them why and why it's worth doing it and then getting them on board. So, but that was a perfect example. Now we use it. Man, I love their service. They do a great job. But so, you know, you can go backwards and then forwards again. And I think the communication with the staff and telling them why, because it's always a little bit harder, is right. So important.
Well, some of those decisions are, I mean, there's sometimes where you play it safe and you can make decisions that are technically change, but it's really playing safe. And then Other times the opposite spectrum is where you are leaning into some challenge that's pretty scary. You're going to make a change and this is frightening. So what is that like for you?
So 4 years ago, actually probably 6 years ago now, I knew that my 5-op practice was getting too small. I was working 5 days a week. I had a 1 day a week associate. So I eventually got down to 4, but triple hygiene every day and just me. And we couldn't grow anymore. I mean, I was working through lunch. I'd work late, that sort of thing. So I needed a bigger building. Well, in Portland, real estate is not cheap. And so there's an empty lot. Also, I think location, by the way, maybe I could talk about that for a second, is a huge, you know, difference. Like that neighborhood we talked about, my location in it was walkable. I mean, there's a lot of pros to it. So I knew I didn't want, I drew literally a 5-block radius and I didn't want to be outside of that. So I was trying to get something in there and nothing was working. And then I go to lunch one day and I see an old man, like 2 houses from us, putting up a 4x4, you know, for sale post. And I asked him, is this for sale? And he's like, yep, I'm going to sell it. And I was like, I will pay you whatever you want. Don't put it on the market. And he said, well, I want this much, but I'm putting it on the market. I'm like, damn it. So then I did. I called my realtor and I said, that lot there is worth more to me than anybody else in this world. And so it happened to be, there's a commercial building between me and it. And this was a risk because I overpaid for the house by a couple hundred grand. And I hired a land use attorney to see if I could get the zoning changed. So if anybody's worked with the big city on zoning change, that's rough. And so this land use attorney told me that he's like, oh man, Aaron, I got some news for you. Oh, what? He's like, I'm not sure if you should buy that. I'm like, why? He says, well, you got a 50-50 chance of being able to do the zoning. I'm like, hell, I've had way worse chances. 50-50, that sounds great. So I talked to my wife and I said, hon, honestly, if this doesn't work, we're out about $200,000 to $300,000 because we overpaid it. We could always sell the house later. And then it cost me a couple hundred grand to try to get the zoning changed. But I thought, but if it does work, then that's when we get real change. So I spent a lot of money getting that zoning changed. The lawyer eventually told me the main reason that zoning changes don't happen is everybody's a not in my backyard person. So I went and literally baked cookies for the neighborhood association. And I told them my plans, and it happened to help that half of the neighborhood board were my patients. And I told them how I was going to increase from 12 to 20 working a living wage jobs, and which is just, you know, like candy to the kids, right? And so I told them how we give full health insurance, we give benefits, all this stuff to our, you know, our people who live in this community. So that was really helpful. So I ended up getting the zoning changed. And the day the zoning changed, the lot went from a value with a house on it of 500 to dirt at 1 million. So its value doubled in that. So, and then I built a large 11-op practice, and that's scary. I didn't have an associate lined up. I had my previous building rent was like $3,000 a month, and now it's $15,000 a month, you know?
And it's a beautiful building. And if anybody, people should go to BelmontFamilyDentistry.com or wherever you're at. I don't know if that's it, but.
Yeah, no, that's exactly Belmont. Yeah, BelmontFamily-Dentistry.com or something like that. Anyway, Aaron
right. Tinkler. You'll find it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which isn't is a beautiful building.
Oh, it's Belmont-Dentistry.com. But yeah, isn't that crazy? I don't know that. But it's all designed with flow and growth, right? So that was one of those things where, but I had to sit down and I had to ask, what's the cost if this doesn't work out? I don't lose my house. My kids still get to go to the same school. Nobody thinks of me as a failure. So in the end, I'll bet you that decision, that 4x4 getting put in the ground post day, I'll bet you on my retirement, that's worth about $4 or $5 million.
Yeah.
That decision.
You know what? What's great about it is, one, you made a scary decision. You took a huge leap, yep, which sounded like a coin toss, but you changed what was a coin toss into a pretty good percentage. What was a 50-50, you turn into a 90-10 by baking cookies, talking to everybody. So you don't just flip the coin and hope for the best. You make a decision and you worked hard to make it work out.
It was going to work. You know, there was no doubt about it. I'm too pretty to say no to it too many, too long. Not just, but you know, and that's the thing. That's the hard work, right? I mean, you can't expect somebody to do it for you. The richest people in the world, most successful people take risks. And I think you just have to figure out what's the downside to it and be okay, even if that happens, right?
Yeah. But I really love that example because I like the idea and I've not really thought about risk taking in this way. I mean, we think of risk taking as a flip of the coin, but you don't just flip a coin. You work hard to make, you take the risk, but you've stacked the deck because you're going to work to make it happen.
You make your own luck, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, those decisions, you look back and they were scary at the time. Don't get me wrong. But if you know that you're okay with both outcomes, it's not that risky.
So can you think of some mistakes you made that were kind of painful?
Yeah, I can think of my first associate experience. I had a 1-day-a-week associate and she was straight out of school and she was the nicest young dentist ever. In fact, I still talk to her a ton. And she worked for me for about 2 years. And then she found a practice to buy because mine definitely wasn't for sale at that point. And she told me at the end through, actually, I think I heard it secondhand, that she didn't think I cared about what she did because I never came in on Fridays to oversee her. And I was doing the opposite. I was thinking that I was showing her I had complete trust. I've never read a chart that she wrote. You know, I didn't want to micromanage her. I wanted to show her I thought she was a great dentist straight out of school and that I trusted her to contact me if she needed help. And so my second and third associate, I've completely changed that. You know, I offer to mentor when they ask, but then I'm more present. Yeah. And so we had those conversations when we were just first meeting to see if this was going to work out. So those are one of those ways where your intentions were good, but it actually meant the opposite to them. You have a lot of associates. You know how that goes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We learn from each of those. We think we're doing something that's going to work out. We think it's right. And we're okay, I'll do that differently next time.
I still see Elise at some study clubs and, you know, we have a great relationship, but I'm just thinking, sorry, I kind of was an idiot. But the ability to admit failure, I don't know, it just makes you want to work harder to not have it happen again, but it's going to happen again. And show your staff that you're okay, that you're going to do it different next time.
Yeah, I like that. So what are you excited about right now in dentistry? Anything that's the future brings that's exciting for you?
Well, we have a Solea laser, we have CBCT implant, all of everything. And I really feel like Invisalign for me right now is where it's at. I enjoy not drilling on something. And there's actually another product I've helped like beta test, and it's called the 3M Filtek Matrix. Have you seen that?
No, I'm excited to though.
No. So I was paid for this, so I should probably say that. But as mentors at CDocs, like we are, every now and then you get an opportunity to help a company. And they wanted to know how to get, what you do is you take a CEREC scan, any scanner will work, but of course, in this case, a CEREC, because we all know it's the best. I'm kind of biased, but you take that and you upload essentially ortho photos to a portal that 3M has a lab now. And what it is it is meant to do additive composite veneers. Okay, which a lot of us learned how to do freehand, and I must not be a good enough dentist because mine didn't look great freehand. So they do a 3D printed jig that you place over the teeth, and you hot composite injection molds a veneer.
Oh, wow.
And it takes what used to take me probably 30 to 40 minutes of veneer to about 10 minutes of veneer. And of course, the lab bill is like $300 for like two teeth, and it's like $310 for three teeth. But well, I've been doing quite a few of them, and I'm actually teaching a course next spring. It's about 10 months from now. But anyways, a really neat product. So, and it's a great after Invisalign product. So people have some spacing, or they have the black triangles. I don't know. Did you ever take the BioClear classes by the Dr. Clark? Yep. Yeah. Great classes. I mean, like, he's a very gifted teacher and his product is amazing. It is technique sensitive.
Yeah, they're not easy to use.
Oh, man.
I fumbled through a lot of those. And
yeah, but it's a great technique that done correctly is very good. This uses a lot of the same principles, but is significantly less technique sensitive. Now, I'll give Dr. Clark, we've actually talked personally, and he's like, well, mine's a better final result. And he's probably, in his hands, he's probably right. But this product makes it so in all of our hands, it can be very successful. And honestly, profitable, because it cuts down on chair time. So that's one of the cool new products. I'm always looking for new products. I'm a huge Patterson fan, but more than a Patterson fan, honestly, it could just as well be Shine or any of the other ones. But my rep, Dale, he's great. He's amazing. He'd do anything for me. So when Dale says, hey, I've got a product for you to look at, I look at it and I'm a pretty easy sell. So
that keeps you excited, keeps you trying new things. Yeah, I like that.
For sure.
Well, that's awesome. I just want to thank you for coming on. This has been great to talk. It's always fun to talk. But I learn a lot when I talk with you, and I like the idea. There's a few things you said today that I'll take to heart, and some of that is making your own luck, and some of it, I like the idea of how we take care of our staff members and meet their needs in a way that we can keep them on board.
Yeah, I mean, the doctor who I met, who I bought his practice from, he passed away really quickly after I bought it, and I learned at his wake, not a single patient would come up and talk at the microphone at his wake. And not a single person talked about a shade match or a margin. So I learned a lot that day. And I want our employees to feel the same about us and create a legacy that's more than finance.
I love that. That's awesome. Now, if somebody wanted to come take that class on what you're going to teach, can we find that yet? Can we sign
up? Yeah, we'll start promoting it this summer. It's through the Oregon Academy of General Dentistry. We have actually in Oregon here, we have something really cool. So I'm an AGD member. A lot of us general dentists are. We actually have our own 12 operatory center that we hold all of our own classes at. And some of it's hands-on, some of it's hands-on patients, some of it's just lecture. But OregonAGD.org, O-R-A-G-D.org. And they're great use. Like, for example, Oregon just came up with some new implant guidelines. And so if you didn't go to quite as thorough of a course as Dr. Garg does, you need 86 hours of hands-on. And so the Oregon AGD really quickly went and they've got some courses for our local people. And so that'll be advertised through there. It's pretty exciting stuff. And I just think for longevity, additive dentistry is pretty nice, and being able to do it more predictably, everybody could use.
Yeah. I love that. All right. Well, let's do this again sometime. I appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. This episode of the Better Dental Life podcast was brought to you by Better Dental Life. When you are ready to transform your life, transform your practice, and expand your income, become a member of Better Dental Life. You can find out more about us at betterdentallife.com. Make sure to search for the Better Dental Life podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, and click subscribe so you never miss an episode. On behalf of the team here at Better Dental Life, thank you for listening.